Accession number 13757, reel 2.
Reel 2. Did you have proper winter clothing?
Well, the army clothing was very, very good. It was very thick, and it was warm, and you always had pullovers with you. And greatcoats, they wouldn't be carried by the troops, but greatcoats would be on the regimental transport, so that greatcoats were available if they were needed.
What happened to you in the Ardennes once you got there?
We had to support the Americans and prevent the breakthrough by the Germans, which was achieved. And we then were withdrawn again back to our original sector.
Did your units actually have to fight the Germans in the Ardennes?
There was some contact, yes.
Of what kind?
Fighting.
At long range or close range?
Fairly close.
And after the Ardennes?
We were returned to our original sector, which was in Belgium somewhere.
Were you then doing work holding the line, or were you out of the line?
Whether we went back to Waterloo and had our rest, I don't recall, or whether we had to go straight back into battle again. I don't remember that.
Did you ever make use of captured German vehicles?
No, but I made use of one or two abandoned vehicles. My own personal transport when I landed in Normandy was a motorcycle, which was quite useless in the mud. Quite useless, and I was fortunate in finding an abandoned jeep, and I took that over. During the course of our movements, I managed to acquire one or two other vehicles, such as the jeep or two and the 1500. It was highly irregular. It ought not to be done, because one's petrol requirements were based on the regimental strength of the of transport, and I had more transport than we were entitled to, but it was extremely useful. I wasn't found out.
How could you start it? Were there ignition keys in it?
Oh, that I don't remember. I don't remember, but whatever the circumstances, we managed to get the vehicles going.
What was the work that your unit did in the early part of 1945?
Well, we had the Rhine crossing, and although, first of all, going through the Reichswald forest, and that was awful.
In what way?
We had been equipped with white clothing because snow was expected, and snow didn't come. Instead of snow, we had torrential rain, so the white clothing was abandoned, and we were very much deeply in mud.
So it was bad from the point of view of the living conditions rather than from the point of view of the fighting?
Yes.
Was there much sickness in the unit because of the conditions?
I don't remember that there was much sickness.
Did you have any contact with the Dutch civilians?
Yes, we did, in various places, and they too were delighted to see us.
Were they starving?
No, I don't think they were.
what happened to you? Any other incidents in the Reichswald?
No, only that we were preparing for the Rhine crossing.
What preparations did you personally have to make for the crossing?
To be prepared for it. There were one or two places on the Rhine which were absolutely ghastly. They were horrible. Places like Gork, Wiesel, and Kievelaer. That was after the Reichswald and before the Rhine crossing.
What was so horrible about Gork and so on?
Fighting. The Germans were getting desperate.
Was the German resistance strong there?
Yes, it was, and practically everything except the kitchen sink was thrown at us in those areas. It was really bad. There was another place where it was where the Germans were fighting fanatically. I think it was called Ebenbüren. That was a nasty place.
How did the morale in the units hold up?
Very well indeed, but of course we were involved in the Eindhoven-Arnhem situation. We were supposed to get through to Arnhem to support the parachutists who had landed. Eventually, we were not able to get through. That had to be abandoned.
In your work, who was your superior to whom you were responsible?
I was part of company headquarters and, of course, ultimately, the commanding officer.
Which company was this?
Headquarter company.
Who was in charge of headquarter company? Can you remember?
No, I can't.
What did you think of the leadership of your battalion?
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Did most of the men come from Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire?
I would think the majority, yes.
What kind of temperament did they have?
Excellent.
Can we take the story further on from the Gogh area to the actual push into Germany?
Well, perhaps I'd better go back to Eindhoven, where we were supposed to get through to Arnhem and couldn't. And after Eindhoven, we had to go back and take Sertogenbosch. Our commanding officer was killed there. He went forward with the second in command in a jeep, and they were ambushed. The commanding officer was killed. The second in command got away, and I think the driver got away, and the second in command then took over the battalion.
Were you given any details about this ambush at Sertogenbosch?
All that I know is that the commanding officer had gone forward on a reconnaissance and they were ambushed. I can't really tell you any more about that.
How did that affect morale in the unit?
We were very sad to lose the commanding officer because he was a first-class soldier.
What was the Rhine crossing like for you?
For us, we were fortunate, because by the time we had to cross the Rhine, the engineers had built a pontoon bridge. It was quite wonderful, an enormous long bridge right over the Rhine. Of course, the bridge wobbled about quite a lot, but you got over safely.
Were you under fire as you crossed?
Not on the crossing, that I remember.
Where did you cross the Rhine?
somewhere, you know, Kivalera or Gogh.
Did German resistance then start to fade?
No. No, it was quite severe. And I see that Ibn Buren was in fact after the Rhine crossing. After the Rhine crossing, and there the Germans were fighting quite fanatically.
Was the age of the enemy similar to that of the British forces?
No, a lot of them were not much more than boys. They were either boys or tended to be older men.
What about the German civilians as you passed through Germany? What was their attitude towards you?
I don't remember that until we got to Hamburg.
What happened there?
Our final objective was supposed to have been the line of the River Elbe. And when we got to the Elbe, then you thought, thank goodness, it's over, and I'm still in one piece. But no sooner had we arrived at the Elbe than we were told that we had to go on and take Hamburg at first light the next morning, which we proceeded to do. There was some resistance. The barricades in Hamburg, I had never seen anything like it. They were enormous. But you saw the occasional civilian standing at a window, but standing back and waving to us. And they were undoubtedly pleased to see us. But there was still some sniping.
Weren't they taking a big risk and waving to you?
Oh, yes. But they were clearly pleased to see us.
What were the barricades made of in Hamburg?
Oh, bricks, concrete, rubble.
How high were they?
Half the height of a house.
Seems strange that German civilians should be welcoming to enemy forces.
That was the occasional one that we saw. Others, perhaps we saw, there might not have been reaction, but if there were a reaction that we were welcomed, then you remembered that. The German commander in Hamburg said that there would not be any organized resistance. He said he had some troops under his command that he couldn't control, and he thought there might be some shooting. There was, but I don't remember that we suffered casualties.
So what he said turned out to be correct?
Yes.
Had Hamburg been much damaged?
Yes. Yes.
By the army or the air force?
Oh, the air force, yes.
How did the troops behave in occupied territory?
Well, there was a very strict rule of non-fraternization, which meant that you weren't even allowed to speak to Germans, let alone smile to them. It became rather difficult because the war was declared over when we were in Hamburg, and there were girls parading up and down dressed in almost nothing. That must have been the most tremendous temptation to the troops, and I know that some gave way.
Why should they have been parading in next to nothing?
Because they wanted food. Chocolate, cigarettes.
So, did the troops ignore the non-fraternization order?
In the main, yes, but I know that one or two gave way.
Did you obey the order?
Yes.
Did you ever punish anybody for disobeying it?
I never heard of anybody new.
Did you see anything of any camps as you went through Germany?
Well, we were immediately overrun by displaced persons. As soon as the war was declared over, there were camps, yes, of slave labour, of all sorts of nationalities who were controlled by the Germans. As soon as the war was declared over, they left, and in effect said, you can get on with it. And that really was absolute hell, trying to control those people.
Are there any incidents that stick out in your mind?
We had to patrol our area, the regimental area. We had to patrol it at night with vehicles with searchlights, because there was so much murder, thieving, and so on by the displaced persons against the Germans. So that in effect, we had to try to protect the Germans.
What kind of nationalities of DPs were doing this?
I know there were Russian, Eastern European, a lot. And the time came when we had to organise their return to their own country, and we had to requisition whatever transport we could find. We had to requisition trains. They were allowed to carry one small package of hand luggage. They came with piles of goods that they had stolen, and they were loaded into trains or into lorries. We never got the trains back. Wherever those trains went to, they never came back. Nor the transport either. And what happened to the drivers, I don't know, but I expect they were killed.
Were they German drivers?
Yes.
Were they allowed to keep the stolen goods?
We couldn't take it away from them, no.
Did any of the DPs show any resistance to going back?
Not that I remember.
Were there men, women and children?
Yes.
Which part of Germany was this from which you were sending them?
Hamburg.
Did you come into contact with the Red Army?
I didn't know. I don't remember that our regiment did.
Did any of the Germans say anything to you about the Russian forces?
Not to me, I never heard of it.
How long were you in Germany as an occupation force?
Well, the war was declared over in the early days of May. I was finally demobilised, I think, in November. But by then, we had been moved back to our occupational area, which was near Cologne, a place called Leverkusen, where there was a very large IG Farben factory, IG Farben, rather on the lines of ICI. We took over a beautiful house as regimental headquarters, or the mess. It was a house that had been used by IG Farben to entertain particularly high-ranking visitors, civilians, and we took the house over. There were some German staff there, some girls who were waiting at table, and we had a chef who in fact was an SS person, but he was a jolly good chef. On one occasion, these girls were singing, and they were singing a German lullaby, Schlafe mein Prinzchen, schlafe ein. Sleep, My Little One, Sleep, and they were singing it in harmony, and it was absolutely beautiful, after all we had been through, to hear these girls singing so nicely. It really was quite wonderful. And then somebody, some German, I don't know who it was, I don't remember, very kindly wrote the score for me and the words, and I still have it. I brought it home with me. They wrote the score of Schlaf am Ende, Prinzchen, Schlaf am Ende. It was lovely. I was also taken out to lunch. One of the directors of IG Farben wanted me to see the company's holiday home area, and would I have lunch, and I refused, but I wanted to see the holiday home area, and I was taken. Beautiful houses, and the employees of the factory could take the houses over for the period of their holidays. I was in fact given lunch, which was somehow, I don't know how they found it, but they found some meat, and I was given a very good lunch. I couldn't do anything about it.
Had you initially refused because of their shortages?
Oh, yes.
What were the Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Light Infantry supposed to do regarding the IG Farben industry?
Absolutely nothing. We were merely occupational troops. We had to maintain law and order.
Was there a bad law and order situation in Leverkusen?
No, there wasn't. But we took over. The Americans had been there before we got there, and quite clearly they had been rather more slack than we were. Our discipline was rather stronger.
In what way had the GIs been slack?
Fraternization.
Did any of the Germans complain to you?
Not to me personally, no.
Had there been any question of the unit going out to the Far East?
No. No, but in Leverkusen, I took over an office, and there was some transport there, and there were some garages, and in one of the garages there was a Maybach car, but it had no wheels. We had lost the commanding officer's vehicle. It was blown up on the Main, so I had to get a replacement. But there was this beautiful car in the garage, and I found the person responsible for transport in IG Farben, and I told him I wanted that vehicle on the road, and I wanted it on the road tomorrow. And it was put on the road tomorrow, and it was brought to me. A beautiful vehicle, absolutely complete. They wanted me to drive it, and I refused. No, you can, and I come with you. And I took it over, and I promised the director that when we have finished with it, we will give it back to you. The commanding officer had it for some time until I was able to get a replacement vehicle for him. And when I did, I took this vehicle back, and the German director, he just couldn't understand it, that we were giving it back to him, that we had not kept it. We had made a promise and we kept it.
Was it in good condition when you gave it back?
Oh yes, perfect.
What feelings did you have about the Germans once you had finished with your period of occupation of their country?
One couldn't help but feel sorry for them. They had to go to search for food. They had to go out into the country on bicycles to try to find potatoes or whatever.
Did you ever come across any hostility from Germans at this time?
No. There was a curfew, which I think ended at 7 o'clock in the morning, and on the stroke of 7 those Germans would be out working.